is a totally different Ramban than the Ramban you might be used to from Sefer Bereishis. New tricks up his sleeve. And a lot of the things that we'll touch on will be similar in methodology, but in terms of content, it's totally different. I want to start off with the Hakdamah. The Ramban gives us a little introduction to Sefer Shmos, which is the first source. I think I would have gone to the next part as the main part of this year, but I feel like I can't skip his Hakdamah, and we'll try to highlight some key points which come out from his introduction to Shmos. It's often important to read his Hakdamahs to each Sefer because they set the stage for what he's really going to focus on throughout as he goes through. So, Ramban begins. Hishlema kasav Sefer Bereishis. Finishes Sefer Bereishis. Who Sefer Hayetzira? Bechidish Olam. The Yetziras Kol notes there. Here you go. Sefer Bereishis has been completed, which was all about the beginning of the world and the beginning of all creation, all people that are created. He says that we completed the story of the Avos, which is, in a certain sense, creation for their children. As we know, as we saw in Bereishis, a theme that Ramban touched a lot upon was Maisa Avos, Simon Lebanim. That things that happened to the Avos happened to their children. And we can learn a lot about the future from that which occurred to the Avos. Therefore, in a certain sense, that's the upcoming events. They were leading up to Galus Mitzrayim. We saw how the Ramban in Parshas Lech Lecha told us that the reason why the Bnei Yisrael went down to Galus Mitzrayim was in part because of sins of Avraham Avinu. Now, the Ramban tells us, we're going to see the results of the actions that we saw taken in Sefer Bereishis being played out over the course of history in Sefer Shmos. And this is an important point. The Sefer begins with that connection to the last one. That's why he repeats, you know, one of the shock questions right at the beginning of the Parsha is, how come we hear again the names of the Bnei Yisrael? We already know that. We heard it at the end of Vayechi, and yet here we have them again. So, what's the deal with that? So the Ramban explains it's because we want to create that connection between those same people. They were the stone for all the future events that were about to come. But the Ramban explains something deeper. That was when the Gullus began, as soon as we got into Mitzrayim. But when would you think the Gullus ended? Now, you might have thought, once, you know, the Mitzrayim stopped making them work, and the Makos came down. Nope. Once they escaped across the Yom Tov. Still no. Maybe once they got the Torah, you'd think that would be it. But guys, does the Torah end Sefer Shmos, which is all about Gullus and Geula, in Parshas Yisroel? No. It keeps on going. Terumah Tzavah, we get all the way down to Pekudei. And the last psukim in Sefer Shmos, actually about, here you go. The last psukim in Sefer Shmos are all about the Mishkan finally having the Shekhinah dwell amongst the Bnei Yisrael once again. And at that stage, the Ramban tells us, that is when whole Sefer is about the Gullus until the Geula. They were only finally considered Nigal. They were only finally considered to be fully redeemed once they had the Shekhinah back amongst them. If you look, I bolded it a few of the times that he stresses it. That it wasn't even enough to have the Shekhinah back amongst them. But what was the significance of having the Shekhinah back amongst them? That they reached the heights of their forefathers. Until they reached the level of their forefathers. And a few lines later, and the question is, why is the Ramban stressing this so much? We get the point. You know, they were in a terrible situation in Gullus. The Mitzrayim killed our babies. They worked us terribly hard. They did terrible, horrible, horrible things. And yet, that wasn't enough for the Gullus to fully be over. We had to not just get the Torah, but even more than that, we had to reach the same incredibly high level of the Avos. And that's when we were finally considered to have reached the Geula. Why? So Rav Twersky, or Meir Twersky, one of the Rosh Yeshiva at YU, wrote an article about this, and I've heard him speak about it on numerous occasions in the past, and I think it's a very important Musar point that we should all take from here. A story that he didn't say, I'll tell you. The first Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer of Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanis, one of the top five Talmidim, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, one of the pillars of our halacha. Whenever our mission is talking about Rabbi Eliezer versus Rabbi Yoshua, that's Rabbi Eliezer. He's called Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol. Anyhow, he wrote this whole thing of Medrash called Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. The first one is his autobiography. None of you have ever read it before? He tells you a story. We have the autobiography of a Tana. He tells you what happened to him. It may not officially be an autobiography. I guess it's just a biography. It's telling his story. It's not in first person. So I take that back. A biography about a Tana. It tells us that Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanis was already assimilated somewhat, extremely wealthy. Horkanis worked as a good son would, as part of the family business field. And one day, his father sees him crying. Horkanis says to his son, Eliezer, he's like, what are you crying over? I realize I'm 28 years old. I don't know how to say Shema. I don't know anything about Judaism. And I realize that's our heritage. He wants to learn Torah. I said, that's ridiculous. You need Torah for it. Tells him to go back to work, finds him later, hasn't eaten, hasn't stopped crying. I want to learn Torah. You're 28 years old. Marry a wife. I'm fine with that. Use my fortunes. And he cried and he cried and he cried. Now, eventually his father said, look, get out of here. Go figure it out on your own. And he didn't go to any yeshiva. He went to the best yeshiva in the world. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the Gadol Hador. He went to the best yeshiva Rabbi Yoshua, his future chavrusa, the best guy in the yeshiva, goes up to him and says, your deal. He says, I want to learn Torah. I don't know anything. I don't know anything. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai thinks, let's test this guy out. Let's see if he's serious. And he tells him, two halachos. That's all. I'm going to teach you two halachos a day, every day of the week. And you're going to chaz with them on Shabbos. Just two halachos. It's Kitzur Shulchan Aruch or whatever it was. Two halachos a day. Memorize them. Go over them 5, 10 times. And I'm going to test you at the end of each week. See if you know what's going on. Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanus began and began and began. Because he wanted to learn Torah, the highest of heights. The Gemara, the Medrash goes on and tells us about how he was teaching Torah to all of Klal Yisrael. He's a pillar of our Masorah, who could have given up on everything. His father had a good taina. We're extremely wealthy. I'll go, get you married, you'll send your kids Shiva. No, I want to learn Torah. I think that's, when you read this Ramban, you're going to lose over and say, okay, yeah, they were finally in Nigel once they, you know, got the Torah. Beautiful. Or once they reached the level of their fathers. What does that mean? They had aspirations for greatness. They weren't just saying, okay, you know, we'll get out of Mitzrayim, we'll get out of the bad stuff, you know, we'll live our lives as then. No, they wanted something more. They wanted the highest. And they shot for the highest. If you really want it. And I think that Rabbi Ezra Ben Horkanus is a prime example of that. That's the first Ramban. That's the Hagdamah to say for Shemot. How the Ramban approaches the sheet. By the way, I know that this is a lot more than we normally do. I just thought were certain key points that he mentions this parsha Shemot with Yisodah Stick Rambans. But I'm going to focus on one general theme for the next few. And the last few, if you guys want to see certain highlights that I put on there. Let's look at a couple of the stories. And I want to bring out a point about the Ramban's methodology, which is something that I think we can all borrow from and learn when we ourselves look enough. When we do Shtayim Mikra, or we learn during our Chumash Seder, whatever it might be. First story I want to focus on. Something everybody knows. Vayelach Ishmi Beis Levi. A man goes out, Levi. What does that mean? He went. Anyone ever noticed that in the before? Going from. What does the Torah tell us? And he went. So what does it mean that he went? Chazal say that he was following after. What does it mean he was going? He was going after the advice of his daughter Miriam. Amram and Yocheved had separated. Miriam said, no, I have a nevuah that you're going to have the future redeemer of Bnei Israel come out from you. Get back together. And he followed after his advice. So that's a gadikite coming off of the language here of him going. Ibn Ezra offers a different shot. Ibn Ezra says, Rabbi Avram Amar, ki ba'orim rabos ha'yu Yisrael. The Bnei Israel were spread out all through Mitzrayim. He's off looking for a shidduch. He left from his hometown, went out to another distant town, and he went and he married Yocheved. And now look how the Ramban attacks. Umant sorech sheyazkir hakasavzeh. Why? That's a beautiful pshat. It fits with why, and he went there. Okay, that's great. The Torah tells us that. Who cares? So the Jews lived actually in a lot of cities, and Amram went, and he left to go and marry Yocheved. The Torah is not, it's not there to tell us random events that happened to our forefathers. And if you can't find a message, and Ramban rejects that pshat. That's not what Vayelach left means. So Ramban instead says, V'al dati, according to my pshat, Babur shalo chashash l'gzeres paro. Think about how courageous Amram was here. He knew his children were going to die all around him. Like we picture then, you know, the cartoons that we saw, the pictures that we drew in third grade. We forget what it means that these, out of their mother's hands, while they gasped for breath, or were eaten by, it was horrifying. And Amram was willing to risk his life, or his child's life, to go and, you know, flout Mitzrim's will. He went and he got married. This Vayelach was an act of courage, of bravery. He said, no, I'm going to still get married. I'm going to continue on with prolonging our heritage. And that's what it means. He got up. He had to inspire himself to go forward. And that's how the Ramban understands Vayelach. Let's look at the next source. Source number 3. Vinei Nar Boche, another famous story. We know the baby was crying, but the pasuk doesn't say baby. The daughter of Pharaoh sees a baby in the Nile. She sees him crying, but the pasuk says Nar. Nar means boy, a young boy, but not an infant. What's going on? Why does the Torah use such a strange language? If you pay attention, you pick up on these little points. See, Rashi tells us, Kolo Nishma Kinar. His voice was very loud, very thick. It was heard as if he was already an older boy. You know, baby infants, and we've all been to bris milas before, and the kid, like, screams, and, like, no one's, like, all right, it's, like, quietish. Sometimes it's a little bit loud, but it's not the same thing as if one of us were yelling, or even a young boy. So, the Ramban quotes Rashi as saying, he was called a Nar because he was already calling out in a long voice. And the Ramban says, why would the Torah tell us that? Who cares? Look how he phrases it. First of all, Chazal already knocked that away in Sota. What, Moshe was a Baal Mum? He couldn't speak. He had a weird voice already as a baby. Imagine if you had a baby that was crying like a child. Like, kid's a weirdo, right? We'd all be freaked out. So, what's the deal? Ramban says, first of all, you're making Moshe a Baal Mum. And second of all, look at his refrain once again. But Ode, Matam Sheyaz Kirakas of Ovi Kolo. Why would the Pasuk bother to tell us? Oh, I called him a Nar. Why? So you'll realize that he has a deep voice. The Moshe Rabbeinu has a deep voice. Irrelevant. Who cares? So Ramban says that's not what's going on. What's Pshat? The Ramban himself offers his own thing. He explains, first of all, he quotes Rabbi Avram again, Ibn Ezra, who says that, oh, it was saying he was a Nar because he had a fully developed body. That teaches you how handsome Moshe was. All right, at least now you have something to work with. At least our leader, you know, with somebody, you know, really gorgeous. He was really good looking, and maybe that helped inspire people to follow. All right, a little bit better, but still kind of weird. Ramban has a better pshat. Look how he phrases it. Bulai Hiskir Zeliofiov. That would start. Sorry, that was still in the Eben Ezra. And then the next line, Yosher Nachum. Here's what he thinks is more correct. Shinefarish Boshay Bocha Kinar Becharitzas Vizrizos. So he's crying like a boy. A baby, you know, cries. It's when a child cries, that's out of pain. That's something that inspires to feel bad for him. And that was foreshadowing the upcoming event. The Torah was saying Moshe was crying in such an intense fashion that even the Egyptian princess, certainly did not care about Jews, was willing to save him because she had such mercy on him. The pasuk was showing us that he was crying with such intensity, like a na'ar, that it inspired pity in her heart, and that's why she was willing to save him. It's something that would have been a pshat issue. Why would she have that pathetic sight and to inspire her to do so? Now, the Medrash here adds on even another point, that it was Gavriel that came along and slapped Moshe across the face. Why? To make him start crying. Because Moshe had such good midos, even as such an infant, going to his death. It's fine. So Gavriel says, no, cry, idiot. We need you to cry, so Basha will save you. So Gavriel comes along and makes Moshe cry. Get over those good midos, so to speak, in this particular instance. And that's what the Medrash explains from the Nar. Let's look at one more instantiation of this same idea, and we'll bring it home. The next source, Ramban. If you read the Pesukim, you might say, hey, okay, it was during those very long days. But wait a second. That long period of time, blah, 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 happened. If it's trying to tell you something that is in the midst of happening, and it was during that time, it will tell you. What the Pesuk is about to lead to is about how Hashem came to Moshe. And it was during that very long time. After that long period of time, finally Hashem decides to redeem the nation. So after that long time, Hashem came to Moshe. So what does it mean, during that long time? So the Ramban explained that the Pesuk is coming to tell us that because those days were so unbearable, if they were long, we've all been through hard days, long days before. A new schedule in the yeshiva, sometimes you're not used to it and you can't handle it. You're bugging out. So those days feel longer. And that's what the Pesuk is telling us here. Not just that the days were long, the period long, because such terrible things were happening in the Bnei Yisrael. But now I want to focus on the next paragraph. The Ramban explained, and you realize that Moshe ran away from Paro after the whole story, after he killed the Mitzri, about age 12, somewhere between 12 and 20, if you do the calculations, based off different midrashim. He was a young boy. How old was Moshe when he decided, after Hashem told him, he went back to Mitzrayim? 80 years old. This block of, let's say, 68 years of the greatest leader in our history, the Torah is silent on. We have no idea what happened to Moshe during those years. The Midrashim tell you fantastic stories. He became the king of Cush. You know, he defeated them in stories, you know, that are really fantastical, which all have depth to them, and you have to think about, where is the Midrash coming from? What's it trying to teach us? So you see nothing. The few stories about Moshe that we do have, there's a lot to gain from, and you have to figure out why the Torah chose to tell us those stories. But over here, the Ramban explains, look by the number 4 over there, a fourth instance of this idea. I skipped one of them just because we're running out of time. Avalo his kira kasid the brief so. Rak vayisha be'eretz midjan ki lo nischadish biyamim ha'achirim in inchins tarich ha'gasav l'sapro. Because there's no need. Because again, the Torah is not there as a history of just lifelong messages about our midos, certain philosophical concepts that you can closely and you understand about how you should daven to Hashem, how you should interact with Hashem. It's there to just think. And that's the eternality of the Torah. It's not just there because it was a textbook, which could be outdated or could be wrong. It's there to certain ideas, which are relevant in each and every generation, which apply to all of us that live with the human condition, all of us that have to work on our midos, all of us that have to grow in our connection to Hashem. Read the Torah. It's incumbent upon us not to get confused about the story. It's there for a message. Otherwise, as you see from the Ramban, the Torah wouldn't be telling us that. And a second point I want to focus on also is not just that the Torah is more than hidden. Look how closely you have to read the Torah to make sure you catch up on those messages. Otherwise, you'd read this story as if it's a story. You'll read it unintentionally as if it's a history book. Look how the Ramban showed you. Word after word after word. That's a weird word. Why is it there? This is a strange phrase. Why is it there? So some of those we might not be used to. We might not be familiar enough with Hebrew. We might not be familiar enough with all of Chumash to understand and appreciate what's weird, what isn't. But what we could appreciate is reading Rashi and saying, what was bothering Rashi? Of reading Ramban and saying, where did he get this from? Ramban's a little bit more explicit than Rashi, but you could read Rashi. You do Steinmeier, right? And you see Rashi and you're like, why would he say that medrash? What is that possibly coming for? Somebody asked me a question the other week. He came up to me and he said, Rashi says something. Ibn Ezra's pshat makes so much more sense. It's so much more pasha pshat. Rashi's pointing this medrash instantly. If you look closely, pshat reason, which the Ibn Ezra does not address, and Ibn Ezra is forced to lav davka the pasuk in a way that's different, but pshat reasons that the medrash Rashi quoted totally cover. So if you work hard, you read Rashi and you don't just, you know, read it like, there's an expression, unfortunately, of davening through some learning, right? So that's, unfortunately, we can relate to that. And you read through it, you recite it. So you could do that with Rashi. Or, at least for some of them, pick Aliyah, pick Rishon, pick Shani, do it with Ramban. How can I make this deeper? How can I appreciate the depth that they're into, and therefore I can tap into it too? All right, guys, that's the Ramban, a couple of them, and these few, you see them all over Shemos. He hits on with this sort of methodology. Just to highlight them, I'm not going to go into them now, but if you want to see, plot of Paro and his Chachamim about how they managed to entrap the Jewish people, eerily reminiscent of the Nazis. You look at it and you see the parallels, it's right. I mean, we remember and we how horrible that Gullus was and how we ourselves, my grandmother, for example. So that's source five. Number six, the second to last one, is the Ramban in general about whether or not the Bnei Yisrael were worthy, important Hashkafic idea. This Ramban is actually a shorter Ramban, but in this week's Parsha, I referenced, if you want to see, in Perikid Beis, Psukim Mem through Mem Beis, the Ramban has a much greater development of that thesis of whether or not the Bnei Yisrael were worthy of being redeemed at the time when Hashem redeemed us. Have impact for us also in our day. Is it possible that we could be redeemed even if we're not worthy of being redeemed? And the last source I put on there, an interesting one about Paro, requires you reading through all the Rambans to fully appreciate Parshios and Shmos, Bo. The Ramban thought rather highly of Paro. He wasn't like an Achashverosh figure who was just a bumbling idiot. Paro was, in the Ramban's words, Chacham Gadol V'Yodea Es Elokim Umoda. Paro was, you know, that was a real adversary. He represented something, and there was a clash of ideologies here, fundamental